here today with Bob Semro, who has worked as a health policy analyst for the Colorado Consumer Health Initiative and the Bell Policy Center. Bob has served on policy and advocacy committees for many organizations, including the Colorado Alzheimer's Association, the Chronic Care Collaborative, the Colorado Department of Health and Environment, and various advisory groups for the Colorado Health Insurance Exchange. His last legislative project was the passage of House Bill 15-1033, which will create a comprehensive state plan on aging through the year 2030. Mr. Semro will be doing a presentation at the Paradise Theater on June 25th concerning spending, cost, and waste in the American healthcare system. This presentation will be a nonpartisan presentation and won't delve into the Affordable Care Act versus the American Healthcare Act. Welcome to Local Motion, Bob.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So it appears that most of your life's work has been about developing policy to protect the most vulnerable, the elderly, and those who have chronic illness. How did that become your focus?
Well, yeah, actually, I started out in the private sector. I spent probably about 25 years of my life in the private sector. And I ended up being a caregiver for my mother, who had Alzheimer's. And after some years of doing that, I realized that I needed to do something a little different with my life. And that was really the motivation to get into the whole issue of healthcare. So I started volunteering for nonprofit organizations like the Alzheimer's Association first. And then eventually it became a career. And I just retired, actually, from the Bell Policy Center last year.
So you won't be advocating for a particular form of healthcare reform. It will be mostly a discussion about the nature and scope of the problem. You will be focusing on the price of healthcare and prescription drugs, which is of particular interest to those of us on the Western Slope, where healthcare costs are the highest in the whole state of Colorado. Can you give us an overview of why our healthcare costs are so high out here in this part of the state?
Yeah, I think maybe to start with, we should talk about why they're high everywhere. Because in reality, we're probably on the more extreme edge in terms of hospital prices and healthcare costs and healthcare provider costs and drug prices. But it's something that literally is all over the country. It's probably the single biggest issue related to healthcare that, to be honest, we don't really talk anywhere near enough about. And you mentioned that our presentation is going to be nonpartisan. And I guess the point I'd make is when it comes to healthcare costs, if you're a Democrat or a Republican, if you are a liberal or a conservative, your healthcare plan has to address the issue of cost. If it doesn't, it's going to fail. It's a question of when, but it's going to fail eventually. I make the analogy sometimes that if your healthcare plan doesn't deal with cost, it's like trying to run away from a train in a tunnel. No matter how fast you think you're running, it's ultimately going to catch up with you. Healthcare costs in the U.S. have been growing almost exponentially. They're growing almost 2 to 3 times faster than average income. Hospital prices can vary wildly from place to place. In fact, just to give you a sense, a hysterectomy can vary in price from $3,500 to $65,300 in the state of California. And this was from several years ago. This data is back from 2007. Gallbladder removal charges can be anywhere between $2,700 and $36,000. In addition to that, a colonoscopy in the state of California back in 2007 could range from $350 to $5,800. And to give you another example, back in 2010, a dozen eggs would cost about $2.65 a dozen. That's what you paid for them at your local grocery store. If the cost of eggs had grown at the same rate as the cost of healthcare, in 2010, that dozen eggs wouldn't cost you $2.65. It would cost you $55. So compared to the price of other commodities, and this is according to the Institute of Medicine, healthcare costs have increased almost 21 times as fast. So one of the things that we also talk about here in the West Slope is the whole idea of insurance premiums. And insurance premiums, in my mind, are a little more of a symptom than a cause. The biggest single driver of health of insurance premiums is actually the cost of healthcare. Now, going back to your original question, sorry about the long way to get there, but going back to your original question, one of the reasons why we have such high cost out here is because, number one, there aren't many hospitals. So there's not a lot of competition between healthcare providers and hospitals. So, for example, you know, a lot of people, even though they don't live anywhere near Grand Junction, go to St. Mary's to get care because, at least for some procedures, it's cheaper. We also have the extra added problem of resort areas like Aspen, Vail, Telluride. Some of those areas are just high-cost areas to begin with. So hospitals in those areas caused healthcare costs to drive up. But I think probably more than anything in the West Slope, I think it's that lack of competition that really causes the disparity between the prices that you'd pay out on the Front Range versus the prices you pay out here. Now, one thing I do have to caution, prices will tend to vary procedure by procedure. So you can always find a procedure that's done on the West Slope that's more expensive than one in the Front Range. You can find the reverse too. And I guess the last place I'd leave this is that given the fact that healthcare costs are the biggest driver of health insurance premium costs, and also the increase in the cost of healthcare is also what drives premium increases from year to year. It's one of the big factors. Back in 2014 in Garfield County, where I live, we actually had the highest premium costs in the entire country. Not just Colorado, but the entire country. Happily, that's gone down a little bit, but again, I think if you don't do something about the cost of healthcare, even if you bring those premiums down for a little while, cost is going to catch up with it.
So you're saying the way to bring the cost of premiums down is to bring down the cost of healthcare.
Right.
And you're going to be talking about the waste that's happening. And is that contributing also to the high
prices? Oh, it's huge. It's huge. There was a study that was done, again, back in, like, I think it was 2012, done by the Institute of Medicine, which is a very, very respected nonpartisan group. And they made the determination that roughly 30 cents of every dollar spent on healthcare could be actually classified as waste. Now, waste in their terminology could be procedures that were too costly. It could also be administrative costs that were too high. It could be related to unnecessary procedures that really don't need to be done but are done anyway. It could also be outright fraud. And 30 cents of every dollar may not sound like a whole lot until you look at the size of the entire system. So, for example, in 2015, the American healthcare system, the amount of money we spent on it, was $3.2 trillion. Now, if the American health system was a country, it would be the fifth largest economy on the planet. The American healthcare system is actually bigger than the economy, the entire economy of France, the entire economy of Britain. It's almost to the point where it's pushing out Germany, which is the number one economy in Europe. Bottom line, it would also be, if you were looking at the Chinese economy, the American healthcare system would eat up one-third of the entire economy of China. Now, if you're wasting 30 cents of every dollar, you're talking about numbers in the $700, $800, $900 billion range a year. Now, to put that in perspective for you, assuming that that 20%, that 30% figure is actually pretty close to the average. There are a lot of studies. Some of the studies say that waste is about 20%. Some say it's 40 and 45%. But let's take that 30 as a median. That 30%, if you applied it to that $3.2 trillion, would be about $900 billion of waste in any given year. The annual budget for the entire U.S. Defense Department is $598 billion. We waste more money in healthcare than we spend on defense in a given year. In addition to that, if you took a look at all of the money that's spent by federal governments, state governments, and local governments for K-12 education, that's about $600 billion. So we waste 1.5 times more money in the American healthcare system than we spend on educating our kids.
So this is obviously a problem. what do you think some of the solutions are?
I think there's a lot of solutions. And by the way, when we have our presentation, we'll talk a little bit about the solutions, but the solutions are a really long discussion. You could talk about, I make the joke that if you talk about solutions to the healthcare cost problem, if you don't know very much about healthcare, it'll last about 2 days. If you know a lot about healthcare, it'll last about 3 months. So it really tends to be a very complicated topic. But I think one thing that's extremely important is the issue of pricing transparency. If you think about it, we have no idea in advance what any healthcare procedure actually costs. We don't really know until we get the bill. And pricing transparency would be helpful to the consumer, but we've got to be a little careful about that because they do have pricing transparency laws in California, for example. But they haven't succeeded, at least at the consumer level, bringing costs down. I think the educated consumer could be very much helped by pricing transparency. But more than that, I think that just the fact that hospital prices are out there, that healthcare provider prices are out there, it forces the healthcare providers to justify why those things cost as much as they do. It also puts a little competition into the picture, where one hospital now knows how much another hospital is charging. Maybe that will generate a little bit of extra competition that will help to bring those prices down. I'd also have to say that in a lot of countries where they do keep prices down, they do a lot of capping of healthcare prices, saying that, look, this is an essential product. This is something people have to have when they need it. So it's not necessarily the case that regular market factors are going to bring those prices down. So maybe it's necessary to cap those costs at some level to make sure that they don't go beyond what people can afford for absolutely essential, very necessary care. Also, in one of the arguments that you will get from the healthcare industry about pricing transparency is that pricing transparency can vary so much. It's hard to get a list of how much something costs. I would argue that in those countries that do manage healthcare costs, you can go to France and you can get a list of exactly what everything costs. So pricing transparency is one part of it. It's part of the solution, certainly not all of it. Capping those prices, maybe someday we might have to go there. I'm not sure politically if that's going to happen in anything like the near future, but that could be a potential direction. I think another thing was drug pricing. There's actually a bill that was introduced back in 2016, last year. And it's sponsored by John McCain and Tammy Baldwin. So you're looking at a really bipartisan bill. It's called the Fair Drug Pricing Act. And what it would do is it would require drug companies, if they're going to increase the price of their drug by 10% in a given year, they have to be able to justify it. It's what they refer to in the healthcare world as rate review. One other possibility might be to negotiate drug prices for Medicare. Medicare is a huge market for drug companies. And for example, the VA, the Veterans Affairs healthcare plans, they do in fact negotiate for those rates, and it's worked really well. So I don't see why we can't do something like that, for example, in bringing drug prices down. Waste is a lot harder to get at. That's going to take a lot of work, and that's a pretty complicated answer.
A lot of people think the solution to all of this is to have a single-payer system. Do you think that it's likely that we could have that in the state of Colorado?
To be honest, a single-payer system is working in a lot of other countries. I mean, they work pretty well. There are some downsides to them, like in any healthcare system. But generally, a lot of them work well. I personally don't believe that I'm going to see a single-payer system in the country or in a state, probably in my lifetime. I think the political issues, the political divisions are just too big. I look back at 2010 when Democrats had a supermajority in both the House and the Senate, and yet they were unable to pass a public option, which compared to a single-payer system is a pretty small lift. I always thought that if single-payer was going to become the healthcare system in this country, it was going to have to be implemented in the state first. That's kind of what happened with the Affordable Care Act and the healthcare plan in Massachusetts, because we just kind of brought that up to a federal level. I haven't seen a political solution for a single-payer system happen in Vermont, which is where Bernie Sanders is from. I haven't seen it in Colorado. Amendment 69 ended up failing in 2016. And there is a single-payer system, actually, that they're talking about in California. But the startup costs for it are extremely high. It's almost, according to one estimate, about $200 billion more than the current state budget to just start it up. So I think there are some problems that have to be solved first. And I think one is the initial startup costs. Number two is the issue of how you actually implement it. We had a lot of problems in implementing healthcare.gov. The issues associated with a single-payer system would be a lot larger. So logistically, it's a lot tougher to do. And the United States, if it had a single-payer system, that would be the largest population for a single-payer system anywhere in the world. So we would need to kind of address a lot of those issues before it happened. But I think the big one right now, which has nothing to do with logic, by the way, is the issue of political division in the country.
Which is a whole nother program, probably.
That's a lot of talking.
Yeah, and if you're just joining me, I'm here with Bob Semro. He's going to be giving a presentation at the Paradise Theater on June 25th concerning spending, cost, and waste in the American healthcare system. And he's worked as a health policy analyst. So part of what is being proposed are cuts to Medicaid. How would this affect children's hospitals where over 50% of the patients are on Medicaid? And how would it affect some of these rural hospitals like Delta County Memorial, where 22% of their patients are Medicaid patients?
The simple answer is very badly. It would be a huge impact. The current House bill, and again, this could change substantially with the bill that comes out of the Senate, and if that passes, the two that get merged could look wildly different from what we're talking about here. But under the House bill that just passed, Medicaid funding would be turned into what is referred to as a per capita block grant, which basically means since Medicaid is 50% federal and 50% state funding, that the federal part of this would actually be capped per person, regardless of what conditions that individual had, regardless of expenses. Basically, the per capita grant would cap what you could spend on that individual, at least in terms of federal funding. Obviously, you could make that up with state funding. But the Colorado Health Institute projects that as many as 400,000 Coloradans could be kicked off of healthcare because of the end of the Medicaid expansions. And even more would be cut off in after 2020 when this thing would turn into a per capita block grant. So they would end the Medicaid expansions. They would cut the funding massively. And we'd be talking about a loss of funding, probably about 25% of our Medicaid funding. That's huge. Now, there's a part about this that applies to Colorado that doesn't apply to other states. And for us, I think it's probably one of the most important considerations about all this. We live in a Tabor state, the Taxpayer Bill of Rights. We can't pass a revenue increase unless it goes to the voters. That was one of the reasons that Amendment 69 isn't going anywhere right now, because it had to go through that Tabor Amendment election. So If we end up losing 20, 25% of our Medicaid funding, how do we fill that hole? Other states could raise revenue. We can't very easily. So we could end up going from one of the better states in terms of healthcare to one of the worst states in terms of healthcare because we have no way to fill that Medicaid gap when those 400,000 people have no place else to go. Now, the other side of this is that without Medicaid, you get people going more and more to emergency rooms. People still go to emergency rooms even though they're on Medicaid, but arguably less of them. That means that you can't have long-term treatment. That means that, you know, you're just going in, you know, one time for one particular issue. There's no long-term care associated with that. And if those folks can't pay for the cost of that, there's a thing that's called uncompensated care, which I think a lot of people don't understand. An emergency room is required to pay for a person who's in is incapable of paying for that bill. That money or that cost of that treatment gets passed on to people who have insurance. So in essence, the hospital isn't losing the money there. I mean, they're losing some, certainly. But that cost, as much as they can, gets passed on to rates with private insurers. So if you own private insurance, you end up picking up that tab indirectly. And in fact, before the Affordable Care Act, we had, I think, don't hold me to this number exactly, but it's pretty close. Back in 2000, I would say 2009, we had something like $42 billion in uncompensated care across the country that ultimately got passed on to people with insurance.
And how has the Affordable Care Act changed those?
It's given them coverage. People now can get in through Medicaid expansions. They can get subsidies to buy individual market health insurance. That's insurance that you don't get through your company, or if your company especially doesn't offer it.
I know that you're not going to be getting into this a whole lot in your presentation, but I can't help but ask it. What would be a better bill in terms of dealing with these problems that we're having? The Affordable Care Act or the American Health Care Act in terms of reducing health care costs?
You have to be completely honest here. I don't think the Affordable Care Act does an extremely good job of taking care of healthcare costs. It's done a number of things. It's not that it's ignored the issue entirely, but it's done things, for example, like put penalties on hospital readmissions. It's done other things like that, bundled payments, trying to get away from fee-for-service. And the term fee-for-service means when a hospital or healthcare provider doesn't just charge you for an appendectomy, they charge you for every piece of an appendectomy. So they, you know, there's 27 things on the bill. Bundled payments allows that, kind of takes care of that kind of abusive sort of billing practice. So again, it does some things. And when you actually look at the cost curve, we're actually spending less on healthcare than we would have without the Affordable Care Act. But it's not a lot. And the Affordable Care Act also brought a lot of people who need health care into the system that had been excluded before. People with pre-existing conditions, people who couldn't afford health insurance, people who are now on Medicaid. So it sort of reduces spending on one side, but adds to spending by bringing more people into the picture. The American Health Care Act, in my opinion, I don't see it doing anything really to reduce the cost of healthcare itself. What it tries to do is it tries to reduce premium costs for folks. And for some people, it will do that. If you are younger, if you are more well off, you got a better income, if you're healthier, your premiums will probably go down. However, if you're older, if you're less healthy, then that particular healthcare bill is going to do just exactly the opposite. For example, if you're age 50 to 64, under the House bill that just passed, your premiums could be increased by 67% the minute that thing becomes law. It's something that they refer to in the trade as age rating. Under the Affordable Care Act, older people, people 50 to 64, could only be charged three times more than a younger person. Under this new bill, it could be five times The subsidies for older people that you can use now to buy health insurance, those subsidies would be substantially cut, especially on the West Slope. The Affordable Care Act bases those subsidies, what they call advanced premium tax credits. They base them on your age, they base them on your income, and they're also based on the cost of healthcare where you live. Under this House bill, only one of those things is looked at, and that's age. So I did a little calculation for people who make around $40,000 or less a year, who are 60 years old. Bottom line, they would actually have their subsidy reduced by about 64% from where it was. So this absolutely makes this stuff more expensive for older people. And again, the reason for that is because the older you are, the more you use healthcare. And if you're in the individual insurance market where you pay your own premium, you're not part of a big risk pool, you're kind of there's kind of an issue there because you can use a lot of healthcare. You can be very expensive in terms of claims, but you don't bring in much in terms of premiums. So some of the way you bring those premium costs down is you charge people who need healthcare more, and that tends to be older people or it tends to be people who are sicker. And if you can't afford insurance and you're on Medicaid, that's a different issue altogether, and we talked about that a little bit.
So do you think there's going to be more of a collaboration between hospitals, companies, universities to solve this problem a bit as well? I know that CU is buying up hospitals, and what's sort of the benefit of that kind of collaboration?
Well, that's a twin-edged sword, because if you actually look at some of the studies about hospital consolidation, in some areas, consolidating hospitals, that is buying a bunch of hospitals under one big umbrella company, actually doesn't drive costs down, it actually drives them up, because it reduces the competition between hospitals because they're all basically under the same company. So I've seen some studies that talk about hospital prices for some things going up by 20% because of consolidation. And if you're in an area where that company owns all the hospitals in one geographic region, it can actually really cause problems with bringing costs down. I think there is a real incentive on the part of healthcare providers to do something about cost. And I think as good businessmen, and by the way, I have to make the point here that doctors are wonderful people. You know, this isn't about, what I'm talking about here isn't about the little rural clinic. It isn't about the doctor who works in a hospital. It's more about these really big organizations that run lots of hospitals or run lots of healthcare providers and lots of clinics. These are the organizations that have more of an impact on healthcare costs than anybody else. I have tremendous respect for people that are trying to make a go of it in a rural clinic and doing this absolutely incredible work that they don't get compensated nearly enough for. And they require a lot of federal help just to stay afloat. So I just wanted to make the point, I'm absolutely not talking about those folks. But I think in terms of these really big healthcare organizations, I think they're coming to the realization after years and years and years of this very high growth rate that it's really not sustainable. I mean, you really can't keep doing it. Ultimately, it's going to bankrupt American families even more than it's doing now. It has the potential to bankrupt the country. I mean, we're talking about, as I mentioned, I think before in our first question, this is 18% of the economy. This is a huge amount of what we do every day economically. And we're talking about healthcare spending, for example, growing from about $360 billion in 2017 to almost, what would it be? Now I'm just talking about healthcare spending now, to something close to, what, $571 billion. That is just not sustainable. So I really do think that as time wears on, there is going to have to be a lot more effort. I think it will be in the business interest, actually, to start bringing healthcare prices down. But again, I don't think we should really wait for that. I mean, I think that's going to come about naturally, but I do think we have to start talking about things like pricing transparency. We have to start talking about things like bundled payments. We have to start talking about getting away from fee-for-service type healthcare. I think a lot of the medical industry, or the healthcare industry, is kind of moving in that direction, but I think we need to do more.
Are you also going to be talking about what people can do as far as action items?
Probably not, because the best thing you can do is be a good consumer. You've got to question the tests you have, the treatment you have. You got to read your bill and make sure you're not getting assigned to a doctor that's out of network. I mean, there's a lot of things like that that you can do. We'll talk a little bit about it, but probably not a whole lot. Right. I just don't have enough time, unfortunately.
Right.
Even more than the solution, understanding the problem is really, really important. I don't think that most Americans really understand the magnitude of the healthcare cost issue. I don't think they recognize that it's as big as it is. I don't think they recognize that this has a huge impact on them just above and beyond their insurance premiums. For example, back in 2004, $1,525 was added to the price of every General Motors car built in the United States just because of healthcare. That's how much healthcare costs got passed on. This affects your salary because, you know, salary is based on benefits. This also has to do with how many people get hired in the company because those benefits are expensive. It also has to do with the cost of the products you buy. So don't make the assumption that the healthcare issue is just about your premiums alone. There's a lot of ways this cost come back around at you, and you just don't know it.
And you've been listening to an interview with Bob Semro, a retired Colorado health policy analyst. He'll be at the Paradise Theater in Paonia on June 25th, starting at 3 p.m. Mr. Semro's presentation will offer a glimpse into a system that has created some of the most high-priced healthcare in the world. Come and learn about why the American healthcare system is so expensive. This is Allie Lightfoot, and thank you for tuning in to Local Motion.